Now live from Everbank Field, 1010XL 92.5 FM presents Jaguars Today with your host Mike Dempsey and John Osher.
Welcome in, everybody. Happy Monday to you, brought to you by our friends at Wild West Guns and Gold.
That's right.
Johnny knows that.
We could just keep going and going and going on that thread.
About that.
Blaine's big plays, right?
Well, or Cecil's big plays. Yeah. Cecil was just in the hallway. I don't know if you
right?
saw him a second ago. Which is interesting, because he's technically not a Jacksonville Jaguar, right? He's not under contract, I guess.
Well, he is until March.
Oh, is that right? Still part of the league. Okay, until the new league year.
Yep.
March starts.
10th.
But talking with Cecil just a minute ago, he thought it was a catch yesterday. B, he's a wide receiver.
Receivers would think that, yes.
C, he admitted by the letter of the rules, you can't allow that. Yeah, he understood why it was overturned. It was fun talking to him for a few minutes, Tony. He's such a good guy.
He really is. And he just come in here for a couple minutes. We were just like, hey, what's up in the hallway? Just to say, hey, Cecil. And he actually walked in. It's not like we asked him to or anything. He just came in.
And we just started talking football.
Sat down for a couple minutes and talked with him. And, you know, he's a cool guy.
I wish him success.
If he's not going to be around, we'll miss him.
I don't think he will be around.
Yeah.
Is my guess. But I wish him success wherever he goes. And that's what I told him, you know, and he knows. He said, hey, you know, he goes, I'd like to be back. He goes, we had hot and heavy conversations about it in OTAs, and then I started getting hurt. He knows. He's not a dummy.
He's
said
a
I started getting
guy.
Hurt.
He gets it. And I honestly think, I've written this a lot, I don't think he'll be back. Personally, I wish he was back because, like you say, he's in the top 5 or 10 guys I've dealt with in 20 years in terms of enjoying being
from
around
that
the guy.
Standpoint,
he's
the
a
best.
Professional. He appreciates this. He appreciates being in the league. He likes it. He loves it. He, you know, all that stuff. I don't think he'll be back, but I do think that he'll go somewhere into a good system and meaning a system where he fits and that he can be a 2 or a 3.
You know what he's going to be, John? He's going to be a guy that we look up and we're like,
yep.
He's Daryl Smith. He's Eugene. He's one of these guys that when he was here, you understand why they let him go.
Yep.
And you can logically say, well, this is why we're letting you go. And then when he finds the right situation for himself, you're going to be like, damn, why did we let Cecil go? Because there he is making plays for a playoff team.
I know. I mean, there's a good chance that'll happen. And at the same time, as you said, not only logically, but just the way this roster's set up right now with these kids who are coming up, it makes perfect sense to not re-sign him on that level as well. So that's sort of how this league plays out sometimes.
I said, where will Blake Bortles be in 5 years? He said, oh, star. He's going to be I said, star. He said, no doubt. He really believes in Blake Bortles. It came across very genuine to me, Tony. It didn't say, you know, he didn't have to say that. He could
say,
hey.
Well, the thing Cecil likes, I've talked to Cecil quite a bit about this. The thing Cecil really likes about Blake is he said you could see it this year very quickly. That this guy is not overwhelmed by anything. He inspires people around him. Guys like playing with him. And he believes that the ability is there to improve on what he did last year in terms of some of the fundamentals and some of those things everybody knows Blake's got to work on. But all this stuff that you've got to have to be playing on a day like yesterday, he believes Blake has.
He, as many have compared him to Ben Roethlisberger, so he thinks that's the kind of player you're going to ultimately get, you know, a guy who can win championships with. Mm-hmm. So, you know, we'll find out. It was just nice to see him. Like we all say, we don't expect him to be back here. I think he probably is resigned to that. He goes, look, they got 3 rookies. They like those guys a lot.
Right.
And
Cecil does too. I mean,
right.
Cecil will tell you those guys, he thinks every one of those guys has a chance to be a really, really good player. You know, if you multiply it 32 times 3 or 4, 96, 128 receivers in this league, I think Cecil can go somewhere and be one of those 9,600 receivers in this league who are really, really good. It may just not be here.
This was my first complete weekend off, Saturday and Sunday, since August, I guess, right?
Tony, do you have Mike's medals? I mean,
is that your role? My point I was going to tell you, I was going to self-deprecate with that. It apparently made me lazy. I think for the first time since we started doing Jaguars Today, I forgot to put a fan feedback question of the day out there. So we'll do that on the break, and I was thinking something
along
the lines.
Let Tony do it. He's doing everything else today.
Well, he carries the show on a daily basis. But I thought something along the lines of, catch, no catch as far as Dez Bryant's play yesterday. Obviously, I thought it was a phenomenal weekend of playoff football. I really enjoyed even the Seattle game. I enjoyed because the dam kind of broke in the second half, but going into halftime, you know, Carolina, I got a little lucky that the would-be interception was overturned. They get the field goal.
That feels like the team Seattle is this year, though. It's like they lean on you and lean on you.
And then they break your will.
Eventually, it opens up for them. Can they do that against a team as talented as Green Bay?
For an 8-8 team against a 1-seed, that was a pretty good game.
Yeah.
7-9.
Oh, they're 7-8-1. And then 8-8.
That's right. 7-8-1. 8-8-1. You're right. Absolutely right.
Thank you.
All things together. That's right. Well, they were a 7-win team. That's how I think of it anyway. 7-win team in the regular season. You expect Seattle to win that football game.
Sure.
And nothing I saw. And right now, boy, I got to give props to Indy because I did not think it wasn't just Denver. It wasn't just Manning being shaky. I thought Indy was impressive yesterday.
Played very, very well.
And I didn't expect them to be able to play defense as well as they played. They didn't run the ball great. But they've decided, you know what, here's our running game. We're going to throw it 10 times to Dan Heron every week and, you know, a little 5-yard passes and see what he can make out of that. And that's going to be their running game, and so be it. The O-line played well, and that was a theme too. O-lines, man.
Sure.
It was just O-line play was so evident this
O-line
week.
O-line play along with a lot of quarterbacks who helped their offensive line a great deal. I mean, you'd expect with the final eight teams, these guys are all working well together, and you're seeing, you know, what good NFL football is.
Give me Brian Bulaga right now to play right tackle for the Jacksonville Jaguars next year. I know he's got an injury history. Just give me some vets right now. That guy, that was the nastiest. I mean, and it was great because nobody threw a punch in the Dallas-Green Bay game. Just a melee of action, of guys getting shoved and people in people's faces and – you know, that's how you want your offensive line to be. You want them to have an edge. You want them to be nasty. I think we need to see more of that around here. So we got a lot of things we can touch on today. How do you feel about the Dez Bryant call yesterday? Was it karmic retribution for the Dallas Cowboys because of what happened last week? We'll get into our perspective on that. What about the Colts? How have the Colts been able to build it up so quickly from a 2-14 season to be now within a game of the Super Bowl, and I think a pretty good puncher's chance of going into New England, and I never would have thought that coming into the weekend that I could have imagined Indy would A, win, and I could feel that they got a really strong chance to go up there and win this week.
It was pretty obvious yesterday, but Rex Ryan has been named officially.
Officially the name of the coach of the Bills.
The Bills, yeah.
Did not want to wait on the Falcons' job. I think the Falcons might jump on John Fox if he gets hired. I think that could be a quick process for them.
Would make some sense.
You know, much like Rex, a defensive-oriented guy, could he improve that side of the football? Certainly, he's smart enough to hire an offensive coordinator. He's smart enough to have Peyton Manning on his team. Or
yep.
John Elway was smart enough to get him. But he's got offensive pieces in place. Atlanta does. So we'll see. And I can't really blame Rex for not waiting. The game of musical chairs, the music stops at a certain point. You got to have a seat. And I guess he always had the option of going to TV. That's a guy who wants to coach football.
He would be pretty good on TV.
I think he'd be phenomenal on television. Absolutely. All right. So today, 641-1010, if you'd like to get on board, so much to discuss with NFL divisional round playoff weekend in our rearview mirror and the championship games coming up this upcoming weekend. Wild West Guns and Gold brings you the show every Monday. Mike Dempsey, John Osier, Fat Tony here with you on 1010XL 92.5 FM.
I'm Paul Posluszny, and you're listening to the best Jaguars coverage in Jacksonville on 1010XL 92.5 FM.
Happy Monday to you. I know that sounds weird to some people. Wild West Guns and Gold brings it to you. When you're listening to the Jaguars today, it can be a very happy Monday. Mike Dempsey, John Osier, Fat Tony, Tyler Devitt back at 1010XL World Headquarters today. The immediate play that everyone's talking about, the immediate moment of the weekend, was certainly the Dez Bryant play. A little bit of karmic retribution that at least the people in Detroit probably feel.
Karmic retribution?
Yeah. Is that redundant, by the way?
Yeah.
Is karma, I guess karma doesn't always involve retribution.
Karmic.
So,
I like
karmic
that.
Retribution.
I like that.
It's not that out in left field.
I know, I like it.
All
I
right.
Like it.
I'm just trying to aspire to be maybe one day a junior writer for Jaguars.com. Yeah.
Got a senior writer.
Senior writer's dead spot
Got
still.
Got us a senior writer.
Yeah, he's going to be there for a while now.
Well, we hope.
Tony.
Day to day.
I don't think John Osier was the writer of the rule.
No.
But how is the rule written that deals with that particular play?
Here we go. Rule 8, Section 1, Article 3, regarding completed or intercepted passes. A player who makes a catch may advance the ball. A four passes complete by the offense or intercepted by the defense. If a player who is inbounds, A, secures control of the ball in his hands or arms prior to the ball touching the ground, and B, touches the ground inbounds with both feet or any part of his body other than his hands, and C, maintains control of the ball long enough after A and B have been fulfilled to enable him to perform any act common to the game, i.e. maintaining control long enough to pitch it, pass it, advance with it, or avoid or ward off an opponent. Note 1, it is not necessary that he commit such an act, provided that he maintains control of the ball long enough to do so. So there is some level of interpretation there as far as how long you actually have to have possession of a ball for it to be considered possession.
Did I go to sleep there? Did I hear about maintaining possession all the way through the catch going to the ground?
Here it comes. Item 1, player going to the ground. If a player goes to the ground in the act of catching a pass with or without contact by an opponent, he must maintain control of the ball throughout the process of contacting the ground, whether in the field of play or the end zone. If he loses control of the ball and the ball touches the ground before he regains control, the pass is incomplete. If he regains control prior to the ball touching the ground, the pass is complete. And it goes into details on sideline and end zone catches as well.
What'd you think about it?
Well, we talked about it a little bit, and I agree with you that when I didn't think there was any question when I first saw the play they were going to overturn it, because that's the way they've been calling that play for the past 2 or 3 years. And if you've been watching the league, you know, that's why they challenged, is because they looked at that and said, this is going to fall under that, and there's a good chance they're going to overturn it. And I thought they were going to overturn it. And then when you started watching it in slow-mo replay and you started looking at it from the perspective of, was that last little thing that Dez did when he dove for the end zone, was that a football move? Was that? But at the same time, he went to the ground and didn't complete the catch. And I don't see any way in the world that the official, if he had not overturned it, then I think when that game got reviewed by his superiors, it was going to get a grade that you should have overturned it. So I'm not sure the official could have behaved any differently in that situation the way he had been trained.
Well, not to mention
communicating with Blandino on the play. I mean, it's him and Dean that right. are making the decision eventually on what's going to happen with that play. And it's been,
that's the rule right now.
And it's been interesting listening for the last 12 hours to Blandino's had to answer the question, I don't know how many times now, why they made the determination they did on that play. I go back to the Tuck rule. And I thought that it was complete nonsense that rule was in the game, that there's no reason for it to be there. We can all tell when a guy has completed a motion of pump faking and he's bringing the ball back to his body. If it gets knocked out of his hand, it should be a fumble. Right. That's a fumble. It looks like a fumble. It's been a fumble every time that we played on any other level except the NFL. So why isn't that play a fumble? Well, they have a rule that clearly states this is not a fumble, and here's why. And it's the Tuck rule, and it still took 10 years, by the way, for them to get that insanity out of the game of football. I think that the problem with this rule is there is room for interpretation.
Right.
Especially on a play like that, that it's not indisputable whether or not he made a football move.
Right.
The officials decided that he wasn't making a football move and that the entire act was in the motion of going to the ground. I look at it and say, a guy takes 2 steps and on the 3rd step lunges, all while moving the ball from one hand to the other, to put it in a better position to lunge for the end zone, and turning his body completely around to make that move. What is a football move?
So you think it should have been a catch?
I think that if you called it a catch on the field, I don't know how that evidence is indisputable. And I say that with a song in my heart and a smile on my face, knowing that it hurts the Dallas Cowboys. But watching it live, I was like, what a catch.
The problem becomes, and the NFL for the last 15, 20 years, maybe longer, has aspired to make the rules as unsubjective or as objective as they possibly can. And I may be saying that wrong. They want to take interpretation out of it.
They want it to be,
they want to have
it
across the board.
Right.
And it's why they took out the push-out rule, where you
right. Would he have landed in bounds?
Right. They, everything they can do.
Which surprised me, though, why they took the tuck rule out, because that's the whole reason the tuck rule existed, was to eliminate subjectivity. Right. It doesn't matter where the ball is in that forward motion, even if it's down by your hip.
Right.
If it's forward motion, it's an incomplete pass.
The problem becomes there are so many plays in the NFL that as much as you aspire to that aim, which is a fine and noble aim, and it makes sense because you want all 32 teams to be judged the same way, no matter if you're in Green Bay, playing a road game, whatever, it's a sport played by phenomenally athletic people that you can't. Not every rule is going to be what's the word I'm looking for?
Perfect?
Yeah, I mean,
to cover every example?
Yeah. Not every scenario is going to be able to be judged without a human element.
Ah, see, I couldn't put myself in the senior writer's head there. Couldn't
so, as a result, you have plays like this. No matter how much you strive to have the human element taken out of the officiating process, that's why they're there. And that's where all of a sudden yesterday, you've tried to take that out of it, and yesterday you had a huge example of it where a guy had to make a judgment.
I was rooting for him to make the catch. I picked Dallas to win. I wanted, and plus, with 5 minutes left, let's not end the game here. Let's play these 5 minutes out, because I really think Green Bay comes. Now, who knows which way it goes? Maybe they make the 2-point conversion to make a 3-point lead.
And it may have been Hicken or Prosser who rarely make good points, but this morning they made a good point that they were trying to stop on the next drive.
Stop Green Bay, and they couldn't.
Yeah, Dallas was trying to stop Green Bay and couldn't.
Right.
So there's no frame of reference saying that Green Bay wasn't going to go down and score.
Right, but maybe they go down and score, and they kick their own field goal, and Dallas has 2 minutes left on the clock. You just don't know. And I don't really care. It's not that big a deal to me who won the game. My thought on watching the replay, even though he took the 3 steps, each of those steps I thought were stumbling, falling, leaning, you know, however you want to describe it, they were steps. You know how it is when you trip and you're taking steps
all the time,
but you're falling and it's inevitable that you're going down. So you're in the process of going to the ground. That's kind of what I thought it was with Dez Bryant.
But that's the problem with it. When you compare it to the tuck rule, there is no interpretation.
I gotcha.
The tuck rule is the tuck rule. And when you look at it, and despite the fact that we're all watching that game and go, that's a fumble. Like you're watching that game going, that's a fumble. It's pretty clearly a fumble. There's a rule that says it's not. And in this case, is that entire process going to the ground? Maybe. Did he turn to make a football move? Maybe. But
again,
I think everyone that is trying
to
say,
try to take interpretation out of it,
right,
you had to interpret in that case.
You had to. And they want to say that we felt like it was all one move where he's going to the ground in the process of that catch. Okay. That doesn't make it indisputable to me. I just, when you see the play
right
on
about
the field.
That. Was it indisputable? No, it was not.
Right. And that's what they say they need to overturn a call. They called it a catch.
In my mind, when I watched it, I would have overturned it because to me, there was no question in my mind he was going to the ground
the whole time. There was another play earlier in that game, the Randall Cobb catch that they called a catch on the field. There was one replay from behind where you could see the ball maybe touch the ground. It looked like it does touch the ground from behind. From the front, you can't see it. But from the back, it looks like it touched the ground. They still called it a catch because it's not indisputable
Didn't they say on that they didn't have that replay popped up after?
I don't know.
Like I could have sworn they said it there. Oh, we just got this look at it. We didn't have this look at it.
If
they
had called the Dez Bryant play incomplete, then I don't think there's enough evidence there to say he definitely caught the ball. I think that you call that play a catch on the field, that video is not indisputable. And you know how I know it's not indisputable?
Because we're
disputing. Because the whole football world is disputing it for 12 hours.
But people disputed the tuck rule and still do, and it was right. That's indisputable. Right.
That rule was clear. This one is not.
Well, it is to me. If the judgment, you can rule that it's the judgment portion of the tuck rule is the guy's arm moving forward.
It was a pump fake.
Okay,
yeah.
Right. But in this, the rule is clear. If you're catching it in the process of going to the ground, okay,
sure,
then there's always going to be some subjectivity, right, as to whether or not was he going to the ground or not. Was that holding? Was it not holding? Even though there are clear rules defined, I think there's always a little bit of subjectivity. Look, people, again, have disagreed on the tuck rule for as long as has it been 13 years since it happened. And to me, you can't argue that. You can, clearly, because people continue to this day to argue that. We got this tweet from Alex Johnson at AlexJ7512 said three steps and an elbow is a catch. The elbow has nothing to do with it.
No.
Yeah, all the elbow is, the elbow is like one knee equals 2 feet, is establishing possession in bounds. Has nothing to do with what whether
with
or not.
This rule, no.
Right. With this rule, the elbow has nothing to do with it. If there's stumbling steps to me and you're falling, and I thought he was, and again, I wanted him to make the play. I wanted it to be a catch. But as soon as, even in real time, when that ball was popping loose, I'm like, we're going to have to take a look at this. And then when I saw it, I didn't think, to me.
In real time, I thought it was one of the best catches I've ever seen in the playoffs.
That's the thing. In the real world, Tony, in the real world of physics, he caught the ball. He had the ball in his possession.
Right.
All right, in his hands, floating in the air. I mean, he had it secured, but by the NFL rules of possession, I just thought they made the right call.
I still don't think they made the right call.
And that's fine. And if you want to weigh in on that and make your argument on either side, 6-4-1-10-10.
I think he could have pitched it, passed it. He could have done all those things in the time he did because I saw him take two steps. They may have been stumbling steps, but I saw him take two steps, lunge on the third, and turn his body while he's switching hands with the ball. What is a football move? And I get that that term is vague,
but
if that's not, then what is?
Does that supersede the going to the ground aspect of it? I don't either. And
I
to me, that's we have been
if
drilled in.
I think it should.
Again, we've found, and the league has once again, which often happens, found in a spot for interpretation in what they were trying to make a rule that took interpretation out of it. And that's the difficult thing about writing NFL rules.
We'll get a call or two up here real quick. A couple people have asked, would that play, if he crossed the goal line, would the call still be the same? In other words, if the goal line hit, instead of it happening at, say, the 2 to the
yes.
1 yard line, it would have been the same, right? Because
if they consider him going to the ground.
It was the same
right,
one
because
Calvin Johnson
never
played.
Had possession.
Right.
Exactly. Calvin did it in the end zone,
right.
And it still wasn't a touchdown. So, yes, by the way, they interpret the rules in the way they write the rules. It still would have had the same result, would have been incomplete.
Mm-hmm.
At least had they judged it, had the same set of eyes
yeah,
judge
if
it
the
same
way. The interpretation is that he's going to the ground in the process of making the catch, then he has to control the ball through the ground in that case.
And the Calvin play was even more.
Well, the Calvin play, he caught it and put it on the ground.
He put it on the ground with his hand
right.
and left it there,
yeah.
kind of. Although that, I understand. I don't think he did it intentionally, but the Calvin play to me is worse than this.
In terms of more controversy.
Right. I mean, that one I could easily argue easier that was a reception. Let's get, who is up, next year or first, I should say, Billy here on Jaguars today. Good morning, Billy. How are you?
How you doing?
Good.
I just got a question. Why didn't Dez just, you know, he got a little bit greedy on it to me. Why couldn't he just caught the ball, been down at the 1 yard line, and then they had a drive there? They had plenty of time. All they needed was a first down. He got greedy and tried to stretch the ball out, and that's when the interpretation came in there. If he would have just tried to catch the ball, I think it would have been a first down, first and goal from the one, and then they probably would have scored.
He wouldn't be greedy. He was trying to make a play.
Well, if he didn't try to do that, there'd be no argument as
right.
to whether or not this should be overturned or
right.
not. Right? I mean, or
I think his point is just catch the ball, go down, and make sure you secure the catch. I think in his mind, he had secured the catch.
Right.
Right.
So,
and in mind,
it's hard
playing,
to argue
you're
with
to,
the guy trying to win the game.
What happens if they do get stopped at the one?
Right.
And they, I mean, it happens. We see it fumbled snap. Romo drops it on the ground. Why didn't Dez reach
hard.
His arm out? Oh.
It's awfully hard to criticize the guy in the heat of the moment.
He's trying to make a play, man.
You know, he's not sitting there going, okay, should I sit here?
It wasn't one of those guys who's running free to the end zone and drops the ball 6 inches before the goal line. You know what I mean? Where he just gets late. This
sure.
was a guy in the heat of the action. You're not thinking, You're reacting. There's the goal line. It's right there. Let
right.
me stick it out.
Which is why, to me, it's a catch. This is a guy who caught the ball and then turned around and said, I'm going to score. If that's not a football move, a guy catching a ball and turning his body and saying, I'm putting this ball in the end zone, then what
I'm not
is?
Arguing that it's not a football move, but it happened to me in the process of going to the ground.
I guess.
That's how I see it. And, again, it's funny. You're
clearly
more upset, and you're glad at the result. I wanted the other result.
I'm thrilled.
And I think they got it right. So,
yeah.
6-4-1-10-10, we got to take a quick timeout. You want to weigh in on that? We'll also talk, how long is this climb going to be? I mean, you watch the Indianapolis Colts now on the brink of the Super Bowl, getting progressively better every single year, coming off a 2-14 season. And don't tell me that team was loaded with all this other talent when Andrew Luck got there, because they basically flipped the roster for the most part since that point in time. We'll get into that as well. 641-1010, a Wild West Guns and Gold Monday continues on 1010XL, 92.5 FM. Wild West Guns and Gold brings you Jaguars Today every Monday. North Florida's largest dealer of firearms and accessories, from revolvers to sporting arms and everything in between. Wild West Guns and Gold guarantees to meet or beat any gun shop's price in the United States of America. Guns4Jax.com is the website. Guns4Jax.com, or stop by and see them on Lane Avenue. Call 693-0777 for Wild West Guns and Gold. Our Monday sponsor is John Osier. Well,
I don't know that I would be comfortable another day anymore, Mike.
You could trade your gold for guns at Wild West Guns and Gold.
But
I know.
You go the other way.
You really.
That's what I want to know.
You feel
There's
at
so
home.
So many questions asked.
You feel at home. I know.
I do feel,
that,
yeah.
That one of these days we'll talk to our friends over there, and we'll find out if I come in with a gun, will you buy it with gold?
Right.
From
can
me?
It?
I'm thinking
can
no.
Can it go both ways? No.
I'm thinking no.
And how much gold do I need for a gun?
Well, it depends on how much a gun costs and what the price of an ounce of gold is at any given time.
Because the other day, I got to say, once again, I was going through my sock drawer, found a little gold, and said, you know what? I need a gun.
I was told several times yesterday how my son was delighted that he found a cache of diamonds in Minecraft yesterday. Didn't find any gold. And that's important these days, apparently.
Well, I can't trade that.
Get ready for the end of Western civilization, by the way, as apparently Lego is going to come out with a whole line of Minecraft Legos.
Are you
and
serious?
There goes all my disposable income, apparently, because, yeah. I mean, it's bad enough with all the Star Wars sets, you know.
And my son's 18. I'm glad I missed the Minecraft Lego era, because that would have been bad in our house.
Oh, was he a Minecraft guy? Did he do any of...
We still play some Minecraft.
Yeah, Lego, he's probably grown out of
Lego thing.
I got you.
We still get him one small Lego for Christmas.
Do you?
Just for tradition, because for 5 or 6 years it was...
Oh, it's been, yeah, it's been...
It was all it was.
Probably at least 5 or 6 years,
so
too.
Now it's kind of a joke. It's like, okay, here's the Lego, you know, and well, I'm sure it's something we'll continue for.
We're
a
planning
time.
The summer vacation. And by the way, if anybody out there has a good travel agent or knows, because I don't want to... We're thinking about going to the Grand Canyon this summer, all right? And we've never done it, and if we do it... I've been told you really want to plan it out. You want to make sure everything is in order. No. Not going to do that. So if anybody has that, hit me up on Twitter or email, whatever, at MD_1010XL, MD@1010XL.com. And so I'm like, Colin, you know, I'm trying to get him excited about it. I'm like, if you had the choice of, say, Washington, D.C., because Heather really wants to go. And I keep saying he's going to go in junior high. Doesn't everyone go there in junior high?
Well, yes, it's always an option.
I did. Did you go to Washington in junior high?
I did not.
Was there a trip, though, at your school?
I think there might have been, but I did not go.
It was like, for us in, like, eighth grade, it was like the bus trip, if you had to pay, whatever. And it really, looking back on it, it was pretty darn cheap. It couldn't have been more than $200, and it paid for... basically everything for the week. Of course, that was in like 1917 for me.
Mm-hmm.
But so I'm like, Grand Canyon, Washington, D.C. He goes, I don't care, Daddy. I just don't want to have to pick, as long as we get to go to Legoland as well for my birthday. And so it doesn't really matter. You know, Lego Grand Canyon
He's
would be honestly the ultimate for him. He doesn't need to go to Arizona to see all this stuff. All right, 641-1010, if you'd like to get in and weigh in on the Dez Bryant play yesterday, and apparently LSU Leto has a question about that catch or non-catch, as it turned out. What's up, man? How are you?
What's going on, man? You're in luck, dude. I'm a travel agent.
Oh, you are?
I just need you to give me a $500 cash deposit.
Is that right?
I'll take care of anything else. Yeah.
Excellent. All right, good. stop by the stadium. I'll see you at the statue at noon today. Sounds good.
My take is, like, you see receivers that catch, you know, passes on the sideline, and all they do is get their tippy toes in, and that's a complete catch. And this guy, whether he was stumbling or not, had full control 3 feet inbound. And then for me, a football move is reaching out, and they call that a punt. You know what I'm saying? Like, what else do you need when a guy can scrape his toes, you know, go out of bounds?
Well, apparently what else you need is to control it all the way to the ground if you're catching it in the process of going to the ground, no matter how many steps.
Yeah,
again,
that's what you need.
I understand your point of view, man. I'm not saying it's this is horrible. How can anybody see it the other way? I see it the way I see it. I definitely think this is one that you could even say, well, was he really falling on that first step? I don't know. Or was the right contact after that? But to me, in my eyes, again, my immediate gut reaction to it was, oh, this is an easy overturn. And I would have been shocked had it not been overturned.
And mine was the exact opposite. I was surprised they overturned it. When everything was set, watching it live, I thought it was a catch. Watching the replay, I was like, he takes three steps and lunges on the third. I mean, it's not like the play took the ball where it wound up. Dez Bryant, with full control of the thing, turned and said, I'm going to score, and reached that thing out there to put it over the goal line. I guess there needs to be a little bit more clarity in what exactly the rule is, because that looked for all the world like a guy who caught a ball, turned, and tried to get into the end zone.
Again, I'm sure the competition committee will look at this. I don't know what – I'm not sure what they will do to change the wording.
Right, to make it more clear.
Yeah, I mean, it's – again, sometimes you can write a rule as specific as you want, but then when it comes time to actually go interpret it, you're going to have something that falls between the middle.
Or determine that the rule doesn't need to be changed. That any time a player is in that position where it is, if he catches, I don't care how many steps he takes, if he's going to the ground, he has to control it all the way to the ground. And I get that's the interpretation they took. I just disagree with it. That looked like a catch to me.
641-1010 if you want to weigh in, and then we'll move on to some other issues. Let's go to Jerome up next this morning on Jaguars Today. Good morning, Jerome.
Hey, how you doing this morning?
Good.
I just wanted to say one thing about the catch. Did it look like his elbow was down on the ground before the ball came out? Like, I understand he was reaching for it, but did it seem like his other elbow was on the ground before the ball came out? And another thing is, the Jaguars, when y'all plan on talking about the Jaguars?
Thanks, Jerome. Fantastic call. If you don't realize, the show is during the season. Obviously, mostly what we're going to talk about is the Jags. This show is a Jaguars NFL show. What did the Jags, other than the announcement of when they're going to play in London, which we're going to talk about later on this hour? Was there some breaking news I missed this weekend on the Jags?
They interviewed Greg Roman over the weekend.
They did, and he's going to Buffalo.
He's going to Buffalo, so I expected that to be a multiple week process when it first started. So I'm not really surprised that it's playing out this way. So I don't know if Jerome's happy now or not.
I doubt he is. But I would ask Jerome maybe start listening to what we're saying earlier, because we dealt with the elbow on the ground issue 5 minutes ago. So there's that as well.
Yeah,
I throw a snark right back at you.
And in this
Jerome,
case, the elbow on the ground.
And happy to do it.
Didn't matter.
The elbow on the ground has to do with whether you're in bounds or not, whether you're down. You know, like if you get an elbow down instead of your 2 feet in.
It matters if you already had possession and you're trying to rule a fumble. But this
correct.
Is not that.
Correct. If you're running with the ball and you fell to the ground and your elbow hit and then the ball popped loose, then you're down.
But on this, they are very clear that what they want is possession through hitting the ground.
Gotcha.
And they, in their interpretation, that wasn't this.
641-1010. If you'd like to weigh in, you're certainly welcome to do that. I almost feel like now I want to talk about this more for another segment, but I'm not going to be that guy.
You're that guy sometimes.
But I'm not going to be today.
But you are that guy.
But I'm not going to be today.
All right. Well.
This state in football history coming up, the Honda Drive Around the NFL. Oh, Tony, it better be all Jaguar stuff on the Honda Drive Around the NFL. And we'll get to that coming up next. And as well as Jags kicking off 9:30 East Coast time. I'm confused on this whole time zone issue, John. Maybe you can fix me on this or correct my perception. I know the NFL said 1:30 kickoff in London, which to me, doing the math, 5 hours, that'd be 8:30 local time, but apparently that's not always the case in London.
Yeah.
Come on, international Dateline guy.
I'm an international guy, Mike, but it's 9:30. My understanding is it's kicking off at 9:30, and it seemed like when we were over there 2 years ago that it was a 5 hour difference all week and then a 4 hour difference on game day or vice versa. So, you know, I have given you no information.
I thought it was
right
a 5 hour difference even on game day. Because I thought they kicked off at like 6 o'clock local time this year.
It seemed like a couple of years ago it changed over the weekend. Like it was something like daylight saving. It was some sort of weird thing.
See, and this much better. This is Jaguar talking. This is much better than what we were doing. Much more
this
clarity.
This is almost as hard to interpret as the rule.
Yes. Either way, it appears 9:30 kickoff local time.
I will make sure it's 9:30 local. But
yes, it's going to be an early morning kickoff. Much like Detroit played who do they play this year over there?
Atlanta.
Was it Atlanta? That's right.
Yeah.
There you go. All right. This state in football history and the Honda drive around the NFL next on Jaguars Today.
And now, this date in football history.
Oh, a lot to do today with the state in football history, brought to you by the Best Fence Company of Jacksonville. First of all, let me bring up what there is to do on this date in football history. I had it all right in front of me. I swear I did, guys. I swear I did. This date in NFL history, the New York Jets won Super Bowl III. That is one thing that happened on this day in football history. On January 12th, 1969, the Jets became the first AFL team to win the Super Bowl, defeating Baltimore 16-7 in Super Bowl III. There was so much more I wanted to share with you, John. In fact, it was one of the busiest ones I ever had, and I seem to have lost it all. It seems I've disappeared into the ether.
Well, it's time to talk Jaguar football.
Anyway. Well, you know, really, this is all just a big waste of time. So here we go. This date in football history. Happy birthday, Uncle Tom. Tom Dempsey, NFL record holder for a long time with the longest field goal, born on this date in 1947. How about 1906? The NFL Rules Committee legalized what?
Forward pass.
Forward pass, ladies and gentlemen. So we've had it for, 109 years? Is that right? Did I just do the math right? I think I did. That right. Also, this date in football history, January 12, 1946, the NFL champion, Cleveland Rams, soon to be the L.A. Rams, given permission. They're the champs! And they hightailed it out of town. I guess, what, poor attendance for the champions? Not sure what that was all about, but that's the way it went. Also, on this date in Super Bowl history.
If you were in Cleveland.
I suppose, yeah. Right?
L.A. comes calling.
Hey. Let's get out of here. Super Bowl IX, Pittsburgh defeated Minnesota on this date 16-6 in 1975 in the Superdome. Franco Harris, your Super Bowl MVP.
Parkinson never could get over the hump, man.
Also, on this date in football history, the murder trial against O.J. Simpson got underway in Los Angeles. So,
think about that, though.
A lot of tidbits.
NFL schedule ends 3 weeks later now than it used to.
Oh, I know.
I can remember that when the playoffs were always played over your Christmas break.
And honestly, what would be going on in the sports calendar right now? I mean, because college football would be over with for a week and a half or a week practically,
sure. Yeah.
Right? I mean, January 1st was pretty much the culmination for a long time.
I remember in fifth grade watching the
NBA, I guess.
I guess.
New Year's Day bowls on a Thursday, and then the championship games were on a Sunday. I mean, it was that sort of turnaround.
Right.
That's when, you know, it was championship games right on top of the New Year's Day bowls, and then 2 weeks later, Super Bowl, and you were done in mid-January.
We'd have to, like, spend time with our families in meaningful conversation on the weekend and stuff like that. Thank goodness for modern improvements. This state in football history brought to you by the Best Fence Company of Jacksonville. They'll provide the highest quality product for you at a competitive price. They can fabricate the fencing for you, whether it's for your home, for your place of business. Best Fence Company of Jackson will give you a professional free estimate at your convenience if you call them at 268-1638 or visit bestfencejax.net for more information. That is this date in football history.
Now, the Honda drive around the NFL, brought to you by your Jacksonville area Honda dealers.
Well, Rex Ryan apparently is very comfortable in the AFC East, so comfortable that doesn't want to leave that division yet. He's expected to be finalizing a deal today to become the new head coach of the Buffalo Bills, reportedly worth $5.5 million a year for the next 5 years. That's $27.5 million. Ryan, a clearly defensive-minded coach, will be inheriting the fourth-ranked defense in the league. The Buffalo Bills led the NFL in sacks with 54 last season. Greg Roman, the San Francisco 49ers offensive coordinator, is expected to be hired for the same position up in Buffalo. He did interview with the Jaguars for that spot over the weekend. Gary Kubiak has announced that he intends to stay in Baltimore as the offensive coordinator for at least another year. The Ravens OC was expected to be a head coaching candidate for at least two of the teams that are looking to hire a new coach. with the New York Jets and Chicago Bears reportedly interested in at least interviewing Kubiak for their head coaching vacancies and sticking with the AFC North. Coordinator stories. Longtime Pittsburgh Steelers defensive coordinator Dick LeBeau surprised the team by announcing his resignation over the weekend. LeBeau is 77 years old, and the wording here is important. He resigned from his position with the Steelers. He has not used the word retire.
In fact, I thought he specifically said, I'm not retiring.
Yep. Yeah.
In this. Kind of weird, right? I mean, he's been with them in some capacity since 1959. 1959.
Well, except for being the head coach of the Bengals for a while.
Right, but I mean, for that's true. I mean, he started with the Steelers in 1959, and there have been very few years that he hasn't been with that organization since then. That's a good point. He was the head coach of the Bengals,
and it sounded like it was, you know, it was decision on the Steelers' part to move on.
I guess so.
I mean, it, you know, and
they didn't have a great year defensively, certainly. Right. But as time passed, Dick LeBeau by. You know,
so often it's, if you don't have the players.
Isn't that the case, truly? Yeah. I mean, look at Dirk Cutter, right? I mean, Dirk Cutter here, average on a good day, right? Go to Atlanta, pretty good.
Pretty good.
Now he's going to Tampa. We'll see. Depends on the quarterback, right? Who are they going to get in to play quarterback there?
I don't think it's a coincidence. There were 8 good coordinators this weekend. There were 8 pretty good quarterbacks.
You think?
I'm generalizing,
truly.
But you know,
Cam
how it works.
Cam didn't have a great game, certainly, I think Cam is certainly You know, deserving of. It's not like he's on shaky ground as a starting quarterback in the National Football League. He had an injury plagued year, and which you wonder as his career goes on. Will he be able to make the transition to more of a pocket quarterback? Some guys never do. I mean, you know, Randall Cunningham, till the end of his days, was pretty much the same guy. He became a little bit more.
Last year in Minnesota, he did a good job from the pocket.
But he still always had the threat of running, and that was late in his career.
Sure,
Cam's a different beast. Randall was out running guys. He wasn't getting hit a whole lot. Cam's getting hit a ton.
It takes a toll.
I mean, look at Andrew Luck.
Steve McNair.
How does that offensive line play like that this weekend? Andrew Luck last year was the most hit quarterback in the National Football League.
Mm-hmm.
Despite that, they're in the playoffs. They win a playoff game. So clearly you can overcome some of those deficiencies. But yesterday it was like, who is this group right now? They're stoning what's a pretty good collection of pass rushers in Denver. Clearly the quarterback is the biggest part of this mix.
Speaking of the quarterback, do you see what Adam Schefter said? He said Broncos quarterback Peyton Manning played Sunday's divisional playoff loss in the past month of the season with a torn right quad, per 2 sources.
That surprised me.
No, but then again, you have a torn right quad. How much impact does that have on Peyton Manning? Maybe it does. You're pushing off your right leg. Right, I'm sure.
But
you look at Aaron Rodgers. Lollipops for the last month. I mean, if it has been 4 weeks that he's been dealing with that injury, that's really when everyone started going, "Where's his arm?"
Right,
was right when that injury apparently.
That's what I said at the top of the show. In the last couple of years, it looked like the arm lost strength toward the end of the season, which, you know what I mean, makes some sense. But it hadn't lost that kind of. It seemed like a prodigious drop this year, and maybe that's it.
Well, which would make sense as to why they chose to go the route of what's become a C.J. Anderson offense, more so than a Peyton Manning offense. But then again, I mean, look, it impacted it, certainly. I have no doubt, but Aaron Rodgers was impacted. Clearly, in the first half, you could tell he was laboring. He used to out there throwing darts left and right. I mean, Peyton Manning just doesn't have the arm strength to overcome that, I think. Rodgers, I think, can make arm throws. The one he made to Richard Rodgers at the back of the end zone.
Ridiculous.
There were a couple of throws yesterday that Rodgers made where he's off balance and he shouldn't have been able to get any pop on the ball. And, again, you know, special players make special plays. And he's an all-timer.
He probably got lucky in a sense on that play because that is a play he might have taken off and run and picked up 10 yards, you know, in the past. But he was like, I ain't going to be able to do that here.
And it's that corner coming from the other side that he really can't see, which is why the window got as tight as it did.
Yeah.
But he had to throw it that hard to get it there, and that he was able to.
And he's running left.
Right,
as he
despite
throws
that
it.
Injury. And even the first touchdown pass he threw, I mean, it's not the most strong arm throw, but that when he's running towards the line of scrimmage and flips it, it's just. The release is so lightning quick with Aaron Rodgers that it's like, oh, he's running, and then a split second later the ball's in another guy's hand.
There was also the play yesterday, I don't know if you remember it, in the Colts-Broncos game where Peyton rolled right, and it was a third and five, I think.
He had 20 yards.
And he had 20 yards to run and didn't. No, he's not a runner anyway, but he would usually take that. You wonder if playing on that injury is why you don't take that.
Which makes it curious to me, though, if he's not throwing it well down the field, why do you throw it deep to Emmanuel Sanders on consecutive plays when you don't have to have that at that point in the game? You know, it wasn't like they were down 21 points and they had to pick up huge chunks of yards. They just needed first downs. That was, I thought, some odd play calling in that regard. But, hey, look, I have no doubt that impacted him, and that's, you know, that's why I don't think it was a situation like Jeff Prosser said he thought he looked like Johnny Unitas. I mean, Johnny Unitas, the last year of his career, the entire year, I thought.
Right.
Those, you know, Namath and Unitas, those guys were feeble out there, and you felt bad for them. I mean, it was clearly Peyton wasn't Peyton. Yesterday, the Peyton we're used to seeing, but overall, you throw 39 touchdowns this season. I don't think it was that.
Or even Favre during that last month of that last season where it was just, he was so beat up.
Right.
And you're watching him, you're like, as a kid, I grew up, Favre was probably my favorite player in the league. And as a fan of his, watching him play that way at the end of his career, I was like, this is terrible. I don't want to watch him go through. I didn't get that sense with Peyton. I knew that he was dealing with some kind of leg injury. And, you know, it gets colder, whatever. He's been struggling at this point in the year for years. It feels like now, but it, I don't think your arm goes that bad that quick. I did think there must, that leg injury must have been more serious than they were letting on.
On a completely different tact here, Ed Werder reporting for ESPN that six teams are reportedly interested in offensive coordinator / offensive line coach Bill Callahan of the Dallas Cowboys, whose contract is up now. Not all clearly interested in him as an offensive coordinator. There aren't that many openings around the league, although doesn't mean other guys couldn't get fired if the right opportunity came. He wasn't the play caller. Remember we talked about this last week with Scott Linehan, right? Was he the guy who called the plays or not? Was it you or was it O'Halloran we were talking?
Was it O'Halloran? I mean, Linehan is listed as a play caller.
Yes, he is. And that's the point I was going to make, is that he is the passing game coordinator. He's kind of the guy, you know, as much as I know about selecting a new offense coordinator, he's kind of the guy that intrigues me, because Dallas' passing game has been pretty damn good, and certainly the running game was pretty damn good as well. Do you think, I mean, clearly, as more teams get eliminated, more guys are added to the pool of potential Jaguar offensive coordinators. Do you get the sense that there could be some movement this week? Do you think this could be the week?
I'd be surprised if there's not movement this week, but I wouldn't be surprised if we're still looking at this next week.
Which... kind of, it's not the end of the world. You want to get the right guy, right? But you'd love to have him in place as you go to the Senior Bowl to help evaluate some of the players that you could say, hey, yeah, you know what, at least give a little 2 cents. It doesn't mean they're going to draft these guys. They drafted some last year, but just to have that, the earlier you get in there, you start formulating what he's looking for to fit into his vision of what the offense wants to be.
The sooner the better, as long as it's right.
As long as it's right. And that's the thing, right? You never know. Right. I mean, you know, Gus Bradley did. Maybe they would have hired Greg Roman a couple years ago. Would that have worked out well with San Francisco going to the Super Bowl? I think part of that factor was they didn't want to wait. Time will tell whether that's the right call or not. 641-1010 if you want to weigh in. We'll get into that. We'll get into the quick turnaround of the Colts. Are Jaguar fans overly patient with what they've seen over the last couple of years? Take your calls next. 641-1010 is the number. It is a Wild West Guns and Gold Monday on 1010XL 92.5 FM. All right, we continue on Wild West Guns and Gold Monday. If you want to weigh in today on the Fan Feedback Spotlight brought to you this month by Foundation Professionals of Florida, simply weigh in on Dez Bryant's catch. Should it have been a catch? Should it have been overturned as it was? Whatever the case may be, some strong arguments on both sides being made, at least right now. At least strongly held opinions, put it that way. At MD_1010XL, at John Osier, at 1010XL Fat Tony on Twitter, weighing on all that stuff. And you're certainly free to join the program that way. You can call 641-1010 if you'd like to get on board. And we've got several on the line who want to talk either Jags free agency or the state of the rebuild right now. So let's get to the lines and welcome in Jim next up on Jaguars Today. Good morning, Jim.
Good morning. With this karmic retribution comment, it's now come to my attention. You are trying to replace Roger with the Dempsey thesaurus someplace, because the last pregame show, last Jaguars home pregame show, you came up with the word aggravatable when you were talking about Osher.
Did I?
I truly believe that's more O'Halloran than it is Osher, okay?
Oh, did I say that about Osher? Did I say that about
you,
Johnny?
Yeah, said that about Johnny. That's O'Halloran for
well,
sure.
It's all coming back.
O'Halloran's not aggravatable. He is aggravating, and he is aggravated. There's not potential there for aggravation. He has reached the pinnacle of aggravation. I don't know. But thank you, Jim, for listening, regardless.
The other question I have for you, two guys that may have cost themselves some money this weekend. One, Adam Geis. I mean, the play calling yesterday in the Denver, Denver's part of the game, I was like, what in the world are they doing? Because it was like, they went through a segment there where they questioned everything, he was doing. But the other question is that Demaryius Thomas, over the last month, his numbers have been somewhat pedestrian when it comes to, and part of that has to do with Peyton. But if you take him to a team that has a average quarterback, I wonder if his free agency numbers took a little bit of a hit this weekend. Just get your opinion on that.
That's interesting.
Have a great day.
All right, thanks, man. In terms of, is it Geis or Geis? Is it Geis? He may be right. It's G-A-S-E. I've always
G-A-S-E.
Said it Geis, but whatever.
I've always said it Geis too.
The thing that struck me in this game is how freaking spoiled are you in Denver? They are booing the crap out of this team in the second quarter. And I'm like,
right.
Really? Really?
Yeah.
I mean, come on! I get it. You want them to play better.
Games or less.
You have the prerogative. You can boo anybody you want, but
right.
Come on.
Well, again, a couple things. It's tough to call plays when you don't know if your quarterback can throw it over 10 yards, which is how it looked yesterday.
At least with any accuracy or oomph on it.
Right. I mean, when you don't know what you're going to get out of that position, I don't know. It's hard to know what was going through his head, but it's difficult to know what to call if you don't think you have anything 15 yards downfield that will work. So, in that sense, were some of the calls funny? Yes, but once you realize that he couldn't throw, maybe less funny. As far as Thomas, I don't think it'll hurt his free agency number in terms of what he's going to get. Now, is it indicative of what he'll be without Manning? I get a lot of questions about that. Should they go after Julius Thomas? Should they go after Demaryius Thomas if he's available? Are you scared of guys who have played with Brady and Manning? In a sense, you are, but every receiver is going to be helped by his quarterback. Would either of those guys come here and put up the numbers that they did in Denver? Probably not. Would they help? Would they be an upgrade? Probably. So that's what you got to look at.
Look, he had a bad game yesterday, Demaryius Thomas. And he had a slow stretch, however you want to characterize it, down the stretch of the season. He didn't put up his typical numbers for the most part. But I think that was more, to me, a reflection of how they were operating the offense than anything. But
did
look,
he would
I mean,
be
look,
I'm looking
he
at
would
the numbers.
Be very sought after.
There were weeks.
He had a stretch there in November where he had 10 catches for 87 yards, but he had 3 touchdowns in that game. That's just not a lot of yards per catch. 6 for 63, November 30th. December 7th, he had 2 for 11. Since then, 6 for 123 in a touch, 7 for 115, 8 for 115. Those are the last
maybe
3 weeks of the regular season.
Maybe it just felt
season.
Like it,
right.
It did, because he had that 2 for 11. He had the 6 for 63
right.
Is not what you expect.
December,
out of him.
He was really good.
That's pretty, yeah, I guess so. That puts it into better context. Look, the
he
bottom
would
line,
be very sought after.
He's 6'5". He can run. He's athletic. Did he drop some easy ones? He dropped a couple of those little short ones right in his breadbasket. But at the same time,
all receivers have drops.
Peyton helps him, but How many times has Demaryius Thomas caught that little 5-yard hitch, gotten those blocks up front, and busted it for a long play?
Sure.
Right, and that helps Peyton. Yeah. So, I mean, it goes both ways. But, no, I think Demaryius Thomas is the top of the wide receiver list, and I'd be shocked if Denver doesn't do everything in their power to bring him back. He's a true number one to me in the National Football League.
He would be very sought after.
Yeah, I don't think he'll make it to the open market. Let's go to Bud up next here on 1010XL. Good morning, Bud.
Good morning, sir. How you doing today?
Good. What's up?
Listen, I want to talk a little bit about the free agency. my first free agent targets is going to be Justin Houston, outside linebacker, and Julius Thomas, tight end, and Devin McCourtney, safety. Those three guys could help the team tremendously. And my fourth would be going toward the wide receivers and Demaryius Thomas or Randall Cobb. And the fifth one I've got here is a guard. I got Mike Iupati. I don't know if I'm pronouncing
Iupati,
that right.
Yeah. I know who you're talking about. Mike Iupati.
Okay. And then at result, I'm looking for about 7 free agencies there. I've got an idea of 7 free agencies, 7 draft choices, and 6 free agents at the final cut. When I get to my draft side, I'm looking at round 1, third pick as Leonard Williams or Gregory, which a lot of people have. And in the second round, I've got 2 choices here. I got a Darian Green Beckman wide receiver or a TJ Yeldon running back. In my third round, I'm going back to the offensive line with Corey Robinson or a tight end Nick O'Leary. If we could get, some help there, I honestly believe that we could get into some sort of running for the playoff.
All right, but let's jump in there. A couple of, Doriel Green Beckham, which is understandable. You might not know who he is because he hasn't played a whole lot in actuality. I think the feeling is now he's not going to be around in the second round. And, I don't see any way they take, Yeldon in the second round here at Jacksonville.
No, neither do I. I love the idea, though, that there are fans out there who have 13,
he's got it all written.
Hey, go get him.
Hey, he's got Justin Houston, Julius Thomas, Devin McCourty, and we'll get Demaryius Thomas, Randall Cobb, Mike Iupati. Look, I don't doubt that they're going to sign 6 free agents. They're going to be 6 of this caliber.
Go get him.
Yeah, you know what? We'll all take him. Justin Houston going to get out of Kansas City?
Probably not.
I couldn't imagine. Now, would he be wasted in a 4-3 defense is the question, too. You know, he's a 3-4 outside linebacker, pass rusher. Certainly, look, I'll take Justin Houston. I'll figure out how to use Justin Houston.
Oh, yeah, you definitely take a look at him if he actually hits free agency. I'm not sure that Randall Cobb hits free agency either when everything is said and done. And honestly, as well as Devin McCourty played,
he had a great game, didn't he?
Do the Patriots let that guy walk? I mean, they re-signed Chung basically for nothing. They get that contract extension done. It's not going to hurt them at all. They redid Tom Brady's contract where they're paying him the same, but it's bonus money, so they have more money to spend on the cap this year. And it would feel like they're not going to let a 26-year-old safety who's playing at the level that Devin McCourty is walk.
The Patriots are really good and sometimes perceived as being very ruthless about when they let guys go. But it's usually guys who are very replaceable in their minds and who are a little older and are nearer being done. I got the same question about Revis this weekend.
The thing about Revis, though, his cap number is so big.
It's big, but yeah.
I mean, I could see that could be one where there needs to be a restructuring. Revis doesn't seem like the kind of guy who wants to take a penny less. I don't know about that.
Right.
That doesn't mean he would come to Jacksonville, for one thing. You know, Revis is going to be, would be highly sought after by a number of Super Bowl contenders, you would think.
Feels like he likes playing up in the Northeast too, doesn't it?
Well, I mean, he got drafted to one team, but who would have a problem playing for the Patriots, right? Yeah. I mean, they'd win the division every single year, and he's had a pretty good year. But McCourty, Pete Prisco, I think, was the first one that I can recall brought up his name, and, as a let's take a look at the Jags, taking a look at him. So I really watched him on Saturday, and he was outstanding.
And he's
one
of those guys that if he hits free agency, wouldn't be a shock to see him go after him big time, because free safety, you would think you would need that a little bit more of a veteran in the secondary. He would help.
Look, Julius Thomas won't put up the numbers he put up in Denver. He's light years better than anything you got on the roster, though.
Right. I mean, most of these guys aren't going to be. you're not going to put up the same numbers with
Blake
a second
Bortles
year quarterback
you, sure.
as you are with one of the top five of all time.
But are they going to put him up? Is he going to put up better numbers than Marseille? He's got better hands. He's more athletic,
right.
I think, at this point. And
I would think he would help.
Yeah, I think he would absolutely help.
I'm going to go out on a limb.
We'll take all those guys, bud. If you can get it done, please. We appreciate that. Let's get Pat up next here on Jaguars Today. Good morning, Pat. How are you?
Good. How are you?
Good.
I had a question. Well, more of a comment. Just as far as Mercedes Lewis goes and us addressing the tight end situation, I would rather see us draft one. And I really like the guy from, I think it's Max Williams out of Minnesota.
Minnesota.
And I also like Jesse James.
Is that how early of a draft pick do you want to spend on Max Williams?
If he's there in a second, you got to get him.
Well, that's the question. Will he be there? Because I know a lot of people, as soon as he declared, I was reading stories that said he's going to end up being a top 15 guy by the time the combine and all that's done.
Right. So, because I think he's going to end up better than Nick O'Leary. I think O'Leary benefited from just a lot of talent around him. And I feel like Max Williams and Jesse James will have better NFL career.
Perhaps so. The only issue I have with that is, do you want to add another skill position guy who's as young as he is to when you're gonna your top three receivers could conceivably be second year players next year with Robinson, Lee, and Hearns, and you know it's just boy that's an awful lot of youth. I'm not saying they shouldn't look at the right guy at the right time. I'm not saying they shouldn't ever draft an offensive player in this draft,
right.
But do you want to you draft a guy like Max Williams in the second round? You're presuming he's walking in to start.
Many of the same people who complain about the young offense.
Want some young offense.
Want them to draft guys to replace the young offensive players.
I hear you. Hey, look.
I'm not saying what that could.
You may be right.
I don't think that's what that call
is. I haven't seen much of Max Williams until the bowl game, and then I've watched some YouTube highlights of him. Seems like a very impressive guy. Probably the best pass-catching tight end. I don't want another one of these six offensive tackle guys.
Right.
I want a guy that can help the Jags score some points
directly.
That'll
be the dilemma. You really You're not going to take tight end top three.
Let me ask you, is Luke Wilson some special player? Or is Russell Wilson a special player? And all of a sudden, Luke Wilson and Jermaine Kearse and all these guys are pretty damn good players.
Yep.
They're just, I mean, you know, Blake, it's a lot of it's Blake,
mm-hmm.
right? And if he can be that guy, Russell Wilson, I mean, Doug Baldwin's a good receiver. He's not a great receiver. He's their number one.
Right.
Jermaine Kearse is...
Well, especially the way they play, because they're so good running the ball and they dominate defensively, and that helps all that. When you're going like that, you can get by with what we think of as non-number one receivers.
Correct, but it's not like they're winning every game 17-14 up there either.
No.
You know, just dominating with defense and ball control. I mean, they've been explosive.
By the way,
offensively,
Seattle did become the first.
But it starts with the defense.
Defending Super Bowl champion since New England to win a playoff game the next year.
To win one. I know. Isn't that crazy?
Yeah.
And that was New England in what year? Like 2005 or something like that? So
when they won that second of their back-to-back, the defending Super Bowl champion has not won a playoff game the next year until Seattle this
Not even
weekend.
Won a single playoff
And they
game.
What? They won the first round and then lost in the second to Denver, right, that year?
I believe so.
So what happens if they're down 14 in the second quarter? Are they going to boo them too? I mean, it's unbelievable, man. I still can't get over how much booing was going on in Denver in that football game yesterday. Let's get Dean up here next on Jaguars Today. Good morning, Dean. How are you?
Good morning. Hey, just the season before the season ended, and the Jags have been burning my phone up with, renewal information. And my question is what you were saying about the Jag fans being patient. I mean, you know, now that we're in the playoffs, we see what it takes to get there. I mean, you know, it just seems like Green Bay comes up with receivers. It's just out of the blue, you know, that on their roster. I mean, both Green Bay and Dallas have redone their offensive lines. And it just seems like a couple seasons ago, Indy was 1-15. Now they're in the AFC Championship game. Where do you honestly think the Jags are as far as this turnover of the roster and contending, A, for a playoff spot, B, being in the, you know, championship team or ultimately Super Bowl, like you say? I mean, what do you really think as far as patience goes, as far as being contender here in Jacksonville?
I think next season's going to tell an awful lot about where they are. And I think they're going to be better. I've been asked that quite a bit. Are they going to be a playoff team? It's hard for me to predict the playoffs based on a 3-13 team, but I think they're going to be better. Yeah, and
the question is, I think it's for, and it's for every fan to decide.
And it's a legitimate question.
Yeah, far be it for me to sit here and tell you, click renew.
All right,
because that's up to you. And you know, there are Jack fans who say you got to stand by your team and you got to do this, and you got to believe in it. Well, you said that about Gene Smith, and then by the end of his tenure, you're like, what the hell? We wasted 4 years. That's how you felt. So if you're a fan who feels like 4-12 to 3-13 is not good enough, that's your prerogative.
There's little question, and Dave Caldwell was on the Gus Bradley show last week and said something interesting about free agency. And I forget exactly how he said it, but they will go after players who are perhaps a little more out of their quote-unquote ideal age range that they had set in the last couple of years, because they need guys who are going to impact the record now. I mean, this is a team that needs to take a dramatic step next year.
Dramatic step, in my opinion. And by the way, the quick thing on like Green Bay finding receivers. Devontae Adams, good receiver, did nothing for the entire last month of the season. It's a lot easier, and I'm not saying he's not a good player. And they did, you know, but I think if Allen Robinson were healthy in that game yesterday, that would have been Allen Robinson having that game, because you got Jordy Nelson and Randall Cobb. And look, they found them too. So you're right. They have a track record.
They also have Aaron Rodgers, and that's what it comes down to in Jacksonville. How close are they to building a winner? How good is Blake Bortles? I mean, that's the answer to the question. How much will Blake Bortles carry this team? Because Devontae Adams can succeed as much as he does because he's got Aaron Rodgers.
In large part, but also because Jordy Nelson and Randall Cobb are out there, and they're the focus of your secondary. And you run around with single coverage with the third or fourth best guy on your
Much easier for a rookie to come in around veterans and perform well than for a group of rookies to do it together.
But regardless, Green Bay is maybe right now the epitome of draft and develop
in
the National Football League, of any team out there. So I'm not disputing the point. Clearly, they found Nelson to begin with. And when they brought in Nelson, they had Jennings. And they had a guy before him. And they had a guy before him.
That's
so it's right.
That's what you're shooting for.
Right. And that's – so your point is valid. I'm just talking about the specific game of Devontae Adams yesterday.
Yeah,
absolutely. Yeah. I mean, the throw he threw to Devontae Adams was such a freaking laser. I mean, put a whole – my chest would have a gaping hole in it. Just unbelievable. And then great run after the catch on top of that to shake a guy and not even get a finger on him the way he did.
He's special.
I don't know who, Devontae or Aaron?
Aaron,
yes. I agree with Aaron. 641-1010 is the number. We'll come back, take a look at the fan feedback spotlight, some more thoughts on the Jags and the rebuild. What's going on? What for you, Jag fans? Only you can answer it. How patient are you willing to be? 641-1010. It's Jaguars today on a Wild West Guns and Gold Monday on 1010XL 92.5 FM. All right, coming down the home stretch here, Wild West Guns and Gold Monday. We'll get to the fan feedback spotlight momentarily. We're just talking there on the break about Jags performing another playoff team. Somebody directed me. Tom McManus had a post on his Facebook page. He was kind of bemoaning the fact, look at all these guys starting around the NFL. By the way, Tommy Mack will be in with us on Friday, co-hosting Jaguars Today for the very first time.
I look forward to seeing Tommy.
So it'll be good. We can go head-to-head like the days of the Rumble. I look forward to it. I like Tom, and it's. I think there was a period of time when neither one of us could imagine saying that about the other guy. That's what happens sometimes when you work closely with somebody.
Irony can be pretty ironic.
It really can. Tyler brought up on the break, he goes, we should talk about how well Mincy played. You know, all these guys, you look at Mincy, what was he here that was so great? And the rumor, the scuttlebutt is he was a guy who was missing meetings or late, chronically late.
He was suspended for it for a game, if I'm not mistaken.
Right, violation of team rules.
Yeah. So, I mean, that eventually led to him being released.
And he even talked about it this year vaguely. I remember a story that ran on Pro Football Talk, they might have picked it up from somewhere else, but basically said, look, I had a lot of stuff going on in my life. I was dealing with that. That may be the case.
Mm-hmm.
But I look at Mincy this year, and one of the points somebody made, you know, in rebuttal to this was, is he any better than Ryan Davis was this year, or Chris Clemens was this year? I mean, and as you just said, John, all these guys played for a 2-14 team. If they're all so good,
right,
then why were they so bad?
Mincy's a good player. He's played well in Dallas. I don't know exactly where he would have fit in this defensive line rotation to make them better.
Maybe they wouldn't have gone out and signed Chris Clemens. Would have been the thing. I mean, that could have been a case like that.
Sure.
And would it have been a push? All right, fine. But I don't think they're, you know, I mean, and for instance, Denver had him last year. Well, Denver said, no, let's go spend a bunch of money on DeMarcus Ware. Cause somebody said, well, they couldn't afford to bring him back. Well, because they went and got DeMarcus Ware.
Right.
They could have. They basically flipped. And then Dallas said, all right, consolation prize, we'll bring in Jeremy Mincy. I think he has played solid football.
Sure.
But there are guys on the Jags that play solid football. But when you lose, it's we get sick of pointing out, Brandon Leonard had a hell of a rookie year. Well, why does the offensive line stink then? Yo, Luke Bawanko's got a lot of potential. Why does the offensive line stink?
Right.
You get tired of talking about it.
Sure.
People get tired of hearing that. How could you justify signing Reggie Nelson to some new contract the way he played here in Jacksonville?
Right.
And you can blame that on coaching. You know, they didn't develop him properly. You can blame that on him if he wasn't mature enough to handle his responsibilities as a professional, what have you. But how do you take a guy, when you say, wow, he was average as a day as long on a good day, let's go out and sign him to a new big contract?
Right.
I mean, then you're rewarding mediocrity, and I get it. Some of these guys go, and they get to a team where they're surrounded by a lot of better players out there, and it's easier to lift their level of play in that because they're not being counted on to be just the last line of defense all by themselves. Mm-hmm. You know, there's other factors that go into it. I'm not for everybody. There's some that get away. You know,
sure.
There's some bad decisions that you make as well. But, you know, there's other guys that you're like, wow, how did they ever get anything for Mike Thomas?
Well, yeah, and I was struck. The conversation last night after the four games were done, and people asking, well, what does Dallas need to do going forward? And everyone was talking about, well, they need to improve on defense. And it came to my mind, I was like, this team wins 12 games or whatever it was. They wind up in the divisional round of the playoffs, lose a game the way they did because of a controversial call.
Right. How far away are they really?
Right.
To make drastic changes.
But if that team had won six, nobody's saying Mincy is a solid player.
He could have the same year if the result is. If Tony Romo has a 25 interception season, Jeremy Mincy can play the same exact way and nobody's
lauding
it.
It's so colored by what the team does. And look, Dallas is going to address defense in this offseason. You better believe they're going to address defense. They had Rolando McClain playing middle linebacker. That dude couldn't find a spot on a team. Couldn't keep his head straight enough to play football.
But that's a perfect example of what we're talking about, isn't it? He could not. You're right. He quit. He stopped playing. And this year actually played pretty well.
He did.
It was, you know, Sean Lee was supposed to be their guy, but they almost went to McClain out of default. And then he played well. It got an opportunity. And Rod Marinelli, by the way, apparently is leaving their defense coordinator and taking the same job with Tampa. So that team could be in for a step back on that side of the football.
Well, look, they won 12 games or whatever, and in part it's because of how well they played on that side of the ball, too. So you deserve the credit that you get, but everything is so colored by those wins and losses. Jeremy Mincy is an okay player in this league.
You know how they have those websites that do win probability, like in game, like after a certain play, while your chances of winning went up a certain percent.
Right.
I'm sure if that Dez Bryant catch is complete, Dallas's win percentage is over. They're going to win it more than half the time.
Just saw a stat; it went up to like 45% at that.
Okay,
point.
So 40. All right,
the Packers can get the ball.
45.
I never quite understood this.
They had a coin flip chance, basically.
Yeah.
Okay. So if that pass is complete and they win, nobody would think that was unusual, and then they'd be going to the NFC Championship game, and then we wouldn't be saying, what is wrong with Dallas? You know, what needs to be fixed? There's always something to be fixed, unless you win the Super Bowl. Denver thought they needed to fix their defense. They went out and got DeMarcus Ware and T.J. Ward and who am I forgetting?
Tlaib,
right? Yeah. So, you know, and they did get better on that side of the football, but it just wasn't enough, and they actually took a step back this year. Why? Well, the quarterback didn't play as well this year, so it's a funny
thing.
Can't we just get to 1 year, 2 weeks into February, where we're like, what's wrong with all those other 31 teams in the National Football League? Why aren't they the Jacksonville Jaguars? Because they're hoisting the Lombardi Trophy. All right, today, Fan Feedback Spotlight, asking you, did you think the Dez Bryant play should have stood as a catch yesterday? What kind of feedback we get on that, Tony?
From Tony Agolini, we got, no, rule might suck, but it is the rule for now. From Stevie, rules are written as written, say no. Are the rules dumb? Sure, but that's what they say. From Brother Jason, rule book. I'm not sure if he's agreeing or disagreeing.
I think he's agreeing.
From Brian, by the rules, no catch. Karma's a biatch, ain't it, Jerry? Hashtag Cowboys drool. And from Bold New City, yes, caught it, switched arms, cupped in one hand, stretched for the goal line. We all know it.
Yeah, I think more people are on that wasn't a catch, bad rule. I thought he caught it, but according to the almost if people are like, yeah, those damn rules. You know,
yeah.
That's kind of what it is, right? If it weren't for those damn rules, you know, football would just be played by grunting men with no pads and blood and loss of life on the field. And that'd be fine. Which
yeah,
I think Logman would like it like that.
When I was growing up, that was a catch. You know,
yes. Was it?
Yeah. That'd been a catch.
Probably so.
But as you said,
rules have actually gotten, as somebody tweeted, what happened in the days when a catch was a catch? It's actually gotten it, right. It's actually gotten it easier to, you know, with the Bert Emanuel play, now the ground, you can still, if the ball moves, as long as your hand's under it, you can still retain control of it.
They'll juggle something with the rules this offseason to fix something. And then next season there'll be a play where somebody makes a play that nobody ever thought of, and they'll have to do it again.
Yeah, and that's kind of the way it goes. Yeah. And that, you know what? That's part of the fun of sports, honestly. Mm-hmm. I mean, I'd love perfection. You know, some people are like, oh, I love the human element. Well, the human element means you love the fact that there are a bunch of mistakes being made.
Right, there'll always be a human element, but there's nothing wrong with the league continuing to try to get it right. And in this case, you can look at that Dez Bryant play, and certainly half the people who saw it will say, you know what, that wasn't a case where they got it right, so something needs to change. But I think you're always going to have that in some capacity.
Sure. You know what I love? In football especially, I like the superhuman element. And it's watching a guy like Dez Bryant, who is one of a handful of people on the planet that can make the play he made, to go up over a guy with the other guy hitting the ball in his hands to control it coming down to the ground, turn his body, take a step, and lunge into the end zone and put the ball out there. That is superhuman. You know, an average person can't do that. That's what I love about the game.
And that's why you want to sign a guy like Demaryius Thomas.
Right.
Because he can give you that, where you can have the best quarterback in the world sometimes. I mean, Tony Romo just threw it up for grabs.
Yep.
I mean, he just threw it up for grabs.
Trusted his guy to make a play.
Which is a smart play when you're throwing it to him.
Well, it's and in today's NFL, you get a holding call. I mean, how we saw Roger get sacked yesterday, defensive holding, you know, and it's like, you know, it just so many times there are a lot of good things that can happen on that play. I thought it was overall, though, a curious play call in that situation on 4th and 2, you know. Jason Witten for 7. I don't know. There's so many different things you can do there.
I mean, I was watching. I was like, I would be going for it here, too. When he let go of that ball, I was like, oh, my.
Right. Right. But that's why you have Dez Bryant.
Right.
Because he's one-on-one outside. And one-on-one in today's game, the rules are stacked in his favor over that defensive back. Just didn't hang on to it completely, at least as deemed by the National Football League. All right, that does it for us today. For John Osier, for Fat Tony, for Tyler Devitt and Joe Fortunato, I'm Mike Dempsey, wrapping things up here. Thanks to our friends at Wild West Guns and Gold. They bring you the show every Monday. Tomorrow, we got Jeff Loggeman coming in, and we'll talk more NFL playoffs and where the Jags are headed this offseason as well. That does it for us. XL Primetime coming up next on 1010XL 92.5 FM.